Friday and time for our reporter roundtable when we take some time to get you updated on all the news that made headlines around our region this past week. Joining me live in studio are Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Don Day with Boise Dev, and Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press. Welcome to the program.
Thank
Hello.
You.
Hello.
Well, Don, I want to start with you because you wrote an article about two kind of longtime Boise institutions getting set to close. Shige, which is a Japanese and sushi restaurant, and Piper Pub closing in downtown Boise. This has gotten a lot of people, shall we say, up in arms.
People in Boise like things that have been around a long time.
But they never go.
But not enough to go there. And I would say, and I don't mean to disparage Piper Pub. I think I was there a couple months ago. You mentioned Shige, the other one's being Piper Pub. We should explain what's happening there. The owner of that building is Gary Hawkins and Hawkins Development. He bought the building about a year and a half ago, and you've probably seen it. It used to be called Capital Terrace. Now it's called Main and Marketplace, and they're trying to upgrade it. And it needed it, right? It looked like it was 1986 still with
really,
the checkerboard, and it just kind of didn't work.
Yeah, it's really the only building within that whole area now that does feel very old because everything else has either been updated or built in the last
You have this gleaming skyscraper across the street in the 8th and Main building, and you have all the upgrades at Clearwater. So the Hawkins Company has purchased the building, and their intent was to bring it up, modernize it. The challenge that Gary had, and he talked to me about a week ago, was he had some folks who'd been in there a long time and had leases that were what he said was below market rent. And I had actually heard this from a previous developer who was interested in the project, so I think it's something that's kind of been known. And you look at the retailers in there, it's local for the most part. You've got the bookshop and the Ward Hooper Gallery and the Balcony Club and all those things that have been around and are part of the Boise fabric. So the folks at Piper Pub say, you know what, they weren't interested in doing a lease with us. Gary said they weren't interested in upgrading their restaurant. Where the truth lies in there, obviously there's two sides of the story, but the net out is that the Piper Pub is going to close, and I believe that this weekend is
I think
the
it's
last
this weekend, right?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're going to close. Shige also will close. The space that was next to them was kind of turned over a bunch of times through a bunch of different things, and it's already empty. And they've got something else planned there.
Have they said?
They won't say what. It looks like from looking at the leasing flyer that they plan to combine all that space into one larger space. The question that I asked him is, you know, does this affect anybody else in the building? And he said, you know, not right now.
Oh, not right now. But just wait.
Yeah, you know, and so and I didn't press him too much on that just out of respect, and he's not going to tell me a whole lot more than that. But I do think we're going to see some more changes in that building. And, you know, it's business, right? People have a right to buy property and make changes and make upgrades. And the businesses have a right on the other side to really try and get the best lease rates available. In this case, I think it's going to be more change coming in downtown Boise.
You know, it'll be interesting, though, because I think you make a good point, especially with Piper Pub. I mean, honestly, I think I've been there twice in 20 years, to
right.
be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
And whereas the businesses that are downstairs, when you look at the bookstore and all of that, I go to those. I mean, when you think and you see traffic going into those businesses, I would argue that you didn't see as much of that upstairs.
Something I've always observed here is Boiseans don't like to go to the second floor for things.
I know.
It is the weirdest dang thing.
There's an escalator too. Well,
there is an escalator,
lot,
but even like the across the street in the 8th and Main, there's the On the Fly that changed over ownership and was for sale, and people like to go upstairs. I don't really understand it.
Well, I don't know about the second floor. That's an interesting. That
anecdotal.
Would be that would be an interesting PhD.
It would be right. We need to do some research on
but,
that.
I know from my days at the Statesman that you could measure online traffic for stories, and the most popular stories were when businesses were closing, and everybody then would get online and say, "Oh, I should have gone there. You know, it's closing now." So there's something about the notion that things are going away, and you're not going to get a chance to patronize them. I think why this kind of thing resonates with people is Boise is changing so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, landmarks are disappearing. And, you know, there's this question about what's going to happen to the cabin. The really cool artwork on the bottom of that escalator went away. You know, that's something that, you know, everybody would take their kids and, you know, the mouse kind of turning the gears that drove the escalator. And so I think people just see things changing so quickly and so dramatically, and they wonder wonder, is this going to be the place that they love? And I think it's, you know, a legitimate question. There's good change, there's bad change, and yet I think it's, you know, it's exciting and it's anxious all at the same time.
Well, and it's interesting because these stories on public art have really done well for me, whether it's the art at 8th and Fulton that was there for about 2 months or the Sydney's Niche artwork at Capitol Terrace. People are really engaged, mm-hmm. and they hate when new things come in. They go to them. They check it out. They hate when things go away. Yeah. People are just really sensitive to change.
Change, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting because, I mean, I think, you know, and you can be the devil's advocate and say, well, you know what, though? When you look at that entire street, it has become really more of a kind of restaurant row type of thing. And so if they are looking at bringing something new and different that will do well, then you know what? That's what's happening. And I do think that it's that change happening so fast.
Yeah, well, and look at Polo Ray or Pollo Ray, depending on how you want to say that, just down the street. It closed earlier this year. And I heard people be like, oh, I loved that place. I hadn't gone there in a long time.
I hadn't gone there in forever.
Yeah. And then what they replaced it with is, if you haven't been in there, the Diablo & Sons is amazing. They spent a lot of work to really build an upgraded space that helps define what Boise is. Mm-hmm. So sometimes change moves us forward, but people definitely get riled up.
I think the one worrisome aspect is if it becomes a situation where the only people who can afford the rent are national chains, then you will have lost a little bit of character. And I think that is disconcerting. Right.
And chains struggle downtown. I mean, they always have Starbucks tried twice and can't make it go. And you know, you just see the Levi's outlet and the Urban Outfitters.
Right. How about Ruth's Chris across the street there? How is that
well,
done?
It's on the bottom floor.
I don't see that, right? It's not a second floor. I never see
it's on the bottom floor.
There,
oh, it's busy. It's open. Yeah, they had to change their...
I guess I'm not the clientele.
No, you know what? They had to change their happy hour and put on a Sunday. I wouldn't know that personally.
Oh, of course not.
But maybe that's why. Okay, so you brought up the cabin, Bill, and I know, Don, there's some information that's embargoed until later today, so there's certain things you can't talk about. However, I actually just got an email that said, from the cabin, library update and a call to action. So this is coming from the cabin saying, as most of you have heard by now, the city of Boise's library design team, led by Moshe Safdie, prefers to move the cabin to make a way for the new main branch of the Boise Public Library. It goes on. It's a long email, but basically it says, on Tuesday, November 27th, the library design team will present a few relocation options to the city council for consideration. So there are three new sites, and they want the city's or the public's input on this. And this is coming from the cabin.
Okay, so I have this email too, and I'm scanning it just as you are. So earlier this week, I published a story from a Boise City councilor. He didn't write it. He was cited in the story, Scott Ludwig, essentially saying the site that they want to move the cabin to in Julia Davis Park is way too valuable. It's worth, and he gave a couple different estimates in the several millions of dollars. And this is not where we should be putting the cabin. He was very boisterous in his support for the cabin, said let's find another place in Julia Davis Park. This email basically said that there's three new sites to be discussed, and the board has voted to approve only one of them, a space adjacent to the north side of Julia Davis Park behind the Idaho Black History Museum and the Abe Lincoln statue. This is the site that the city councilor specifically said the cabin should not go to. Okay. This is new reporting, so I haven't had a chance, obviously, to
They cited
to talk
you
to
in
Scott.
It.
Yeah, I appreciate that for sure. So there's going to be more to tell. I wasn't able to attend the embargo briefing this morning. I believe Scott had somebody there.
Right, Margaret.
And we can't talk about it.
Right,
yet.
We can't.
Until 2 o'clock
today. Sounds like
today.
They're kind of spilling a lot of it in this email that's out to us, so it puts us in a difficult position.
But right.
So
right.
You'll
in
see that, a story from the Idaho Press, I think.
But I would have, so in that embargo, right. So can I ask this? So in that embargoed meeting, which we can't know about until 2 p.m. today, because for an hour and 45 minutes makes a difference, did they name the other two possible locations?
So, again, I was unable to attend for scheduling conflicts, and I think Scott had a reporter there.
Right. Margaret Carmel, our Boise City Hall reporter, she was there, and if I recall correctly, she did mention the two other sites. I don't think she named them specifically, but the other two sites were disclosed. Mm-hmm. But again, we won't know until 2 o'clock.
Yeah, so the other thing that this email says that's pertinent is that on Tuesday, November 27th, which is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, the library design team will present a few relocation options to the city council for consideration. And the mayor's spokesperson had said this yesterday, that this briefing comes ahead of that city council discussion. So there's going to be some development here. I think we're going to learn more. It sounds like the city has decided not to keep it on the existing site just from reading the email from the cabin. So this is going to be an interesting thing. It goes into that change thing.
So, Bill, go ahead, because what I think is interesting about this is how it will affect public opinion about the library if they cannot figure out what to do with the cabin.
Well, I think they've figured it out, and I think I think their decision is to move it.
Where?
Right. The question is where, and I'm interested in the fact that now, you have members of the city council talking about the development value of parcels of Julia Davis Park. It's like I didn't know that was something we were considering. So that's a separate question. Here's the deal with the cabin. I think there's two schools of thought. There's one school of thought. Old time Boiseans, people who know the history, who know what it took to preserve that, to fight to keep it there, and they have this love of the cabin in that spot. This is real heartache for them. For people who believe in the cabin's kind of bigger mission of promoting literacy and promoting reading and writing, and they've seen the library kind of squeeze that spot. Now the Anne Frank Memorial is squeezing that spot. I don't think there's a lot of heartburn there to moving it to a spot where the cabin continue to function. So I think it's almost become kind of an old-time Boise versus new-time Boise, and I think that's the issue you have. A lot of people who've been here for a long time just see it as one more piece of change in a quickly changing downtown that disconcerts them.
Well, I think people are a little frustrated because one of the three elements of this project is a center to preserve Boise's history and showcase it.
Right.
But we're having to move a piece of history to make way for that. And I do think that folks kind of scratch their heads and go, well, wait a second. We're going to have a new building to showcase history, but we're going to move something that's been on that site for a very long time.
In 1939.
1939, yeah. So that it all feeds into the same narrative of what kind of change is acceptable to the population of the Treasure Valley.
Right. And is the city really listening to folks? And I think you can make a case either way. You know, if you think the city is kind of going ahead and not listening, then you can see this as evidence of that. And if you believe that the city's trying to make the best decisions for the future and looking at this beautiful library and this wonderful property along the river, which I'd be curious what Scott Lugwood thinks that is worth, because
somebody pointed that out. Like, what's that site worth?
Exactly, yeah. Right? No kidding.
So I think you can say that's evidence of farsighted vision as well.
So before we take a break, Scott, I want to talk about the College of Western Idaho asking for this recount because they had put a levy up to the ballot November 6th, and they lost by 144 votes. I mean, so this was, they had to get 55% of the vote.
Right. And they got 54.9%. So this is 231,760 votes were cast in this election, and it fell short by 144 votes. So that triggers the automatic free recount under state law that if it's less than 0.1% of a difference, that you get a recount. So the CWI board voted this week to go ahead and ask for that recount. So we'll have a recount. And then at the same time, it turns out Canyon County.
Well, you had 39 ballots found.
Somebody opened a closet door and saw there's a box of 39 ballots from overseas that hadn't been counted. So they're going to recount that. Now, obviously, 39 votes wouldn't change the outcome. Even if all of them were in support of the levy, that wouldn't change that. Even if the recount fails, even if it still fails, the CWI board, and you have two new board members coming on board, and they are discussing the possibility of bringing the levy back in the May election. So they have that $10 million offer from the state to help pay for this.
It's a sciences building.
Building for nurses and, paramedics and other training for health sciences. They figure that it would add about 2,500 graduates with this building, 100,000 square foot building. And so this offer from the state for the $10 million expires in June. So they are going to have a serious discussion, even if this recount fails, that they might bring this back in May.
Phil?
I know that, you know, Kenny County said that the 39 votes wouldn't affect the outcome of any election, but if you have a recount that gets it, you know, gets a 144 vote margin down to closer to 40, then 39 might make a difference. So I thought that was a little odd. They say, well, it couldn't possibly make a difference with this possible recount in the works.
Yeah, if it, in other words, if it stood, if it were 144, even if all 39 votes were in favor of the levy, that still would fall short with that 144.
And I want to ask you something really quick, because I know Nicole Foy, one of your reporters, went to the actual, saw them counting those 39 ballots on Tuesday, right?
Right.
So how did that be? I mean, she got to be there. And is that part of the process? Because she could come in and watch that.
Right, yeah. And the recount, too, will be open to the public. I actually myself have witnessed a recount. And it's not terribly common, but it's not, you know, unheard
of. Or exciting.
I was going to say, right?
Well, and it was the CUNA City. Yeah. And you're sitting there in a room. But it's kind of tense because you have the two candidates who are, you know, their futures are dependent on this. And they're sitting there watching and you're waiting for the results. It is kind of like watching paint dry, but, you know, it's democracy in action. It was
kind of
fun.
We are continuing our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My guest today, Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, and Don Day with Boise Dev. Want to talk a little bit about, Bill, what happened with Governor Otter and the State Board of Education, and what Representative Wendy Horman, get us updated on this kind of debacle.
I don't know a lot more than what we've all read, which is that, you know, the state wanted a new contract for teacher evaluations and was heading down the road with RFPs, and then Governor Otter kind of shot across the bow with this letter criticizing Representative Horman's involvement with the State Board of Education and saying that, you know, that they were monkeying with the process, and so he put it on hold, and then Governor Otter ordered them to go ahead and grant the grant, so it's an odd thing for an outgoing governor to be, seems to me, so involved in something like this, especially given our history in this state with these education technology contracts that Governor Otter and Mike Gortney, these many years ago, got in so much trouble with Idaho Education Network. And so you would think that you'd be super careful when you start talking about state contracting for this kind of thing. And it just raises more questions, and I think we have answers. I don't know if Scott has more to say.
Yeah, and that was Wendy Horman's defense, actually. Yeah. She says, given our history, I was just looking out for the taxpayer and figuring out, making sure everything was all right. But you had two companies bidding for this contract, and one was a lower bid and one was a little bit higher. But the one that was a little higher was kind of a preferred vendor and a local company. And so we don't know all the details of exactly what conversations went on that kind of stalled the process and steered the contract away from the low bidder. But that appears to be what Governor Otter is chastising Horman for, is, you know, the low bidder was a low bidder, and that should be the contract, and you shouldn't be messing around with this. And Wendy Horman said, well, I was just looking out for the taxpayer, because we've had problems before with these types of contracts.
And she's a member of JFAC, you know, the legislative body that oversees, you know, spending in the state. So it's not outside the realm. It's not outside her role as a, you know, of oversight as a legislator.
Mm-hmm. And so Governor Otter ordered the process to continue on and stop this delaying and go forward with the process. So that's where they're at with that right now.
But what was the issue in, you know, what, 10 years ago now with the Idaho Education Network was that they'd steered the contract to a preferred vendor, even though that it had been underbid by another company. So it's just, I think for a lot of people, it's kind of these disconcerting echoes from what is the biggest debacle during the Otter years.
So Scott, what about this thing with Ada County Highway District? There's a private bridge that they were in the process of building, lots of money, but four houses affected by
this. So it's actually
four
a
or
public,
five, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. In this tiny little, I don't even want to call it a subdivision. These are high-end
pocket
high-end houses owned by Winston Moore, a well-known developer, and Rebecca Arnold, who is an ACHD commissioner. And so this bridge is a public bridge. It's a public road. But the landowners, the homeowners in this little subdivision, asked to get that bridge gated off, and they got permission to gate it off. And so at that point, it kind of becomes a private road if nobody else can ride on it, drive on it.
Right.
But then they start having problems with the bridge. And so there's structural issues with the bridge and might need to be replaced. And so ACHD started studying it and spent about $25,000 to study it. And somebody said, well, you know, this bridge is gated off. You know, is this a public or a private road? Well, it's a public road that's being treated like a private road.
Except for the gate.
Exactly.
Which is allowed under statute.
Well, okay. Yeah. Well, there you go.
And so now ACHD, the commissioners, are saying, well, let's you know, let them have this road and turn this into a private road and get out of the business. If they want this to be private and gated off, then let it be a private road.
The ACHD meeting was pretty interesting, and I don't know if I've ever said that out loud before, but watching it, because I wasn't able to attend, but watching it, the commissioner whose home is back there, Rebecca Arnold, was not present. She had previously scheduled to not be there. There was an incident caught on a hot mic that was actually elevated by Boise Guardian, where one of the people that was upset about this was going to testify, and two of the ACHD commissioners were kind of going back and forth like, well, we'll just let this individual have his say, and the other one kind of made an off color comment like, oh boy, except for not oh boy.
Not oh boy.
And so that happened, and that was caught on the stream, and then the actual discussion was interesting because they said that Winston Moore had asked to have the road back there and the bridge vacated in the 2000s, about like 2008, I believe, was the year. And the city of Boise, which at the time had the right to sign off or deny that, said, no, we want to keep that because it could be potential access to future development of the subdivision. And as I was watching the stream and listening to this, I'm looking at it on Google Maps going, that's not going to work. That wouldn't be the way you would get back there. And then the ACHD commissioners are like, well, that doesn't make sense. And it's like, yeah. So the city doesn't have that power anymore. I don't know where this goes. They deferred it. They kind of mentioned and said, maybe we just need to vacate this whole road and wash our hands of it, which I think would probably be the politically smart thing at this point, especially when you have a commissioner's whose house is back there. That doesn't pass the sniff test for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And that was going to be my question right then and there. This brings up a whole nother layer when you have an ACHD commissioner who has a home in this tiny pocket. It is not like this road serves like a paramount subdivision in Meridian where you have hundreds of homes.
It's a bridge for five people. And they said, you know, the $30,000 they're proposing on a per capita basis is kind of crazy for those five people. You know, so I think that it's a tough deal. Vacating it seems to just make sense. Let Mr. Moore take the control of the road and deal with it in the future. And
so there is some mega resort athletic club potentially coming to Meridian.
Yeah, this is something else. So a company out of Texas has filed to build a huge resort style athletic club, spa,
but private, right?
Private, four pools. In other markets, this is pretty expensive, like $250 a month type of a thing. It's hard because you think, well, if I go to Axiom, I don't pay $250. It's not really that. It's a lot more.
But for $250, I better be able to leave my kids all day long for that.
So it's envisioned for the corner of Eagle and Eustick, and it would be a pretty significant project, and we'll see if it happens. They're building them in relatively large markets around the country, Portland, Houston, a lot in the Bay Area. What's interesting, though, is it's kind of anchored around these two massive outdoor pools with slides and play areas and you know, endless bottom and that kind of stuff, and it's too cold to get in the pool for most of the year in Idaho. So I haven't quite figured out that piece, but another interesting development in Meridian where a lot of these types of things are starting to spring up.
You got to wonder, you know, do we really need one more athletic club in this valley? It's kind of like, you know, Mattress Firms or Walgreens. Do we really need one more?
But didn't they say that about the village?
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't they say that about the village at Meridian?
You drive past, you think, you know, who's supporting these businesses? It's like another coffee shop, right? How can we support one more coffee shop or one more brewery, and yet we continue to get them? So obviously,
I mean, they'll stay open.
Yeah. And these multi-million dollar developers obviously know way more about multi-million-dollar deals than I do. So.
Yeah, I would imagine that they've identified a slice of the market that they think can work, a higher-end demographic that does exist in Meridian, mm-hmm. and families. You know, they want to do daddy-daughter dances, and it's really pitched as kind of a family-centric thing. Mm-hmm. It's got a cafe. They'll have a swim-up bar. I mean, wow. It is...
It's almost like a modern country club.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is like, and I actually told somebody that it's like a country club without the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Golf course.
And when you think of it like that, when you put it in that mm-hmm. sort of framing, you kind of go, okay, maybe that makes sense because you think about Hillcrest and Crane Creek and mm-hmm. all Plantation, all these
but
things.
But golf courses, country yeah. clubs are struggling. Look at Plantation. You know, it's yeah. going to potentially become a subdivision. I will say that the mattress firm out by my house, there's two right across the street from each other.
Glenwood?
And one, yes. Yeah. And one, you know, you said one of those has to close. That's ridiculous. Well, one of them has closed.
Well, there
and
you
so,
go. See, it's going to
happen.
Well, what's interesting to me, though, is I will say this. If they are marketing it as a family-friendly concept, and that is really what they will offer, when my kids were very little, I was always shocked by how family friendly and family forward our community is, the Treasure Valley is, but the lack of things that were available to do with your small children.
Mm-hmm. About $250 a month, though?
Well, no, because I can get a babysitter
that's,
for that.
That's for families.
No, that's
$250.
Well, families are
struggling,
right?
Costs,
and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
So where do you find that populace?
Yeah.
Because that $250, I mean, that's a chunk of change.
Well, and I always like to look at parking for an indication of how many people a development would be served. And this one's got space for 567 cars. Now, granted, you probably wouldn't ever have all 500 and some odd there at the same time, but that means they think that they need the capacity for a lot of people. And that's just at one time.
Mm-hmm.
You look at like at gyms around here, the utilization rates can be pretty low. You know, you pay that $20, $30, $40, $50 a month and maybe go, right? Which is how the whole gym model works. If everybody shows yeah. up at the same time, it
right.
falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
So they only need, I'm sure they've got the numbers figured out, a certain number of folks to say, yeah, I'll pay this. This is worth it to me to make it work. The thing I was thinking about when this was getting put together, I see this, like you think about like Piper Pub closing, right? This is a very specialized use. So if it doesn't work, you're going to have this huge 100,000 square foot specialized building with outdoor pools.
Four empty outdoor pools.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Hard to make it a restaurant.
So
hard
where a restaurant.
Coffee
pool.
Might be kind of a cool restaurant.
Yeah, might be kind of
a mattress firm.
So, but this is still just in the beginning stages,
yeah,
right, Don?
They applied to the city of Meridian earlier this month, and there's as with all of these projects, there's a lot of road to go. It has to get approved. They've got to get funding. They've got to do a construction. The economy falls out, like some worry it will. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. But it is always interesting to see what people are proposing around here.
And there are going to be a lot of people that have opinions on that.
They always do.
Always. I want to thank you guys. I know we didn't hit everything, but, you know, that's what happens on these reporter roundtables. I always appreciate you coming in. My panel today, Don Day with Boise Dev, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Press, and Bill Manny with Idaho Public Television.